Hey, welcome back to Therapy Insiders Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. All right, episode 3 of this little mini series arc specifically focused on high-level business. First episode was John Jacobs, retired SVP of NASDAQ. John kind of broke down his experiences and pitching to Steve Jobs, which was a really cool story. Check that out if you didn't listen. Episode 2, obviously, if you missed that, you probably are living under a rock. It was with Gary Vaynerchuk, one of the top entrepreneurs and business minds out in the game now. Gary gave his thoughts on work-life balance, entrepreneurship, business, marketing, physical therapy. And then today, we have venture capitalist and professor Chris Haroon drop some serious knowledge and really, really amazing business information on raising money for a company, running a successful company, and what high-level venture capitalists or just even business savvy investors look for in a business. And if you think this does not relate to you, if you're in a small business, if you're not interested in building huge startups, you're wrong. These concepts translate, and these concepts are very, very important for growing a business. So hope you enjoy it. Let's get into this episode of Therapy Insiders with Chris Haroon right after a word from our sponsor. You know, we're big fans of business here at Therapy Insiders and UpDoc Media. That's why I'm incredibly excited to attend and present with my partner, Dr. Ben Fung, at Ascend Business Summit in Fort Worth, Texas, on September 9th and 10th. Stick around to the end of this episode where I share a little bit more information about the Ascend Business Summit, as well as a special discount code for you, our listeners, just because, well, you're awesome, for $100 off of your tickets. All right, and now let's get into Therapy Insiders Podcast with special guest Chris Haroon. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders Podcast. Dr. Gene Schirachabrad here. All right, so this is kind of like the trifecta episode of this little mini series that started out with my friend John Jacobs, who's a retired SVP of NASDAQ, and he shared some cool stories and pitching to Steve Jobs and just how stocks work and how he made it real, right? He gave you an understanding. We talked a little bit about funding and the process you go through. Then we had Gary V, obviously everybody knows Gary V, and he talked about the entrepreneurial life and kind of self-awareness and just what it takes to really find success in this world and navigate it and being honest with yourself, which brings us to this episode, which I'm really excited about. I did a refresher course on online, and it was really good. And I don't say this often because there's so many courses at this point. And honestly, at this point, I am just so jaded against the stuff I see with the ads on Facebook and just nonstop people trying to teach things that they have no business teaching, that I just kind of tune out most of the stuff. But this course came recommended, and I vetted it, and I looked at it, and I sat on it, and just, you know, typical consumer stuff. I just kept popping up. I was like, no, and because I was expecting to be disappointed. So finally, I took the course, and it was touted as the number one business course, and it was awesome. It was just fantastic. I really liked it and I enjoyed it. And, you know, with UpDoc Media and everything going on and this new startup that I'm part of, that I'm CEO of, that's a tech firm, we're going through VC funding now. We're going through the process. So I was like, you know, it was good to have a refresher. It was good to have maybe stuff that I missed, stuff that I didn't know through my travels. And it really did help fill in a lot of holes for me that I didn't know. And I feel like my money is well spent if I can get just at least 10% of something new. And I felt that I got more than that with this course. And the person that taught the course is Chris Haroon. And Chris is a venture capitalist himself. And Chris has a new business venture as well that I'll let him talk about. And he went through this entire course. Chris, first of all, thanks for taking the time and being on the show, but how long did this course take you to put together?
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time. So I've been very passionate about education my whole life, and I work as a venture capitalist during the day, and I teach at a couple different graduate business schools at night. And I actually met a doctor at a party recently, and he told me he's no longer a doctor. And I asked him, well, how come? It's a great profession. And he said, because it's not scalable. It's not scalable being a doctor anymore. And I thought, well, how can I make my teaching scalable and fun at the same time? And I came across this incredible company online called Udemy. That's UDEMY.com. And anybody can go online and teach. And so what I did was I just recorded in one day a bunch of the stuff that I teach in class, and I love to teach and help students. And it's called an entire MBA in one course. And so it took me a day. I uploaded it online to Udemy, and it just took off. And I was blown away. And like anything in life that I've been, you know, humbly successful at, it's the things I do where I don't do it for the money. You know, I do it because I'm passionate about it. And so I've always been a firm believer that if you wake up in the morning and tell yourself that you're going to work, then with all due respect, you're doing it wrong. You know, you need to reinvent yourself. You need to find your passion. You know, what was the reason you were put on this earth? And so I put the course online, and it's a course that I've also taught a number of kids from broken homes at the various charities I'm on the board of. And it just took off. And I was absolutely blown away that, you know, I have students now in 168 countries over Udemy. You know, it's the best selling business course they've ever had. And just the ability to be able to reach out and help people, you know, to empower the empowers. And there's that old wonderful prophetic saying, which is, you know, give a person a fish, they'll eat for a day. Teach them how to fish and they'll eat for a lifetime. And so I couldn't be more bullish on the whole online education technology business model. I think that all problems in the world can be solved with proper education. And so I'm very passionate about trying to make change from my end as well.
Absolutely. That's so well said. And business is unique, especially business and healthcare. I love that you brought up that story with the doctor that you met, because he or she is right. It's not scalable. And in fact, in a lot of respects, it's the opposite at this point. It's going in the other direction in terms of financials with insurances. But, you know, even worse so in terms of creativity and passion. I feel like I love students because, one, it's a large audience of ours is students. But it's the passion. I always tell them, your one superpower when you get out of school, when you get out of graduate school and med school and PT school, is this your blinders are off. You have this insatiable passion to create, to help, to accomplish things. And the more that sticks with you, the more things will happen. You'll pivot in your ideas and things that you want to do. Like myself, I was a practicing clinician and eventually went the entrepreneur route in business. But business in itself is such a great outlet for creativity, but in healthcare, it's not taught, Chris. It's just not part of the curriculum. Hmm. That's why courses like yours, I think, are so invaluable.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You said you did this entire course in a day, which I think is incredible, and it's telling for a couple different things. To reference our buddy Gary Vee again, his thing is, If you're going to teach something, you better live it and do it and know it versus doing it once and mm-hmm. then spending your career talking about it, which becomes fluff. You have to fill things in. There is no fluff in what you taught. And especially if you can do that in a day, that means you know your stuff top to bottom. And it was fantastic. So tell us, kind of take us through your history of being a VC. What drew you to being a VC? And you didn't start as a VC, right?
Yeah. No, thanks for that. So I wanted to teach a course that was no BS, no theory, all practical real life stuff. And so what I did in this course was I basically taught every life lesson I've learned in business personally since I started working, you know, from starting a company to raising money to getting a meeting with literally anybody. And then I basically took it through IPO in this online course. Had Goldman Sachs take the company public, and then we did a restructuring in this course as well. And that kind of sums up, you know, my life, my professional life, actually. So I'm from Canada originally, and after undergrad, I went to go work in consulting at Accenture. I loved technology, was passionate about technology, but something was missing. I was also very passionate about finance. And so I went to business school in the States. I went to Columbia University so I could learn about finance. And then I worked on Wall Street for a number of years and at a top hedge fund, and I was miserable. I was miserable, and everybody around me was miserable as well. Everyone on Wall Street, or many people on Wall Street, I should say, are somewhat depressed, because what they do is they just compare themselves to those that make more money than them. And there's no satisfaction if you always do that. And so I read this book that kind of changed my life. It was The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. And he said something from a healthcare and financial perspective that was incredibly prophetic and really resonated with me. And he said this basically, and I'll paraphrase. What surprises me most about man in Western society is that he sacrifices his health for his entire life to make money. And then at the end of his life, he sacrifices all of his money in order to maintain his health. And he realizes at that point, when he looks back upon life, that he never really lived. And so for me, I just want to do what I'm passionate about. And I worked in the hedge fund industry for years, but my real passion and calling was venture capital as well as teaching. And they're both very similar, and I'll explain. In venture capital, you sit on a number of different boards and you help companies grow. You introduce them to customers. Your goal is to help them be able to go public at some point. The same thing with education, especially online. I have students in 168 different countries. You're trying to help students, help them grow their careers or find their passion, more importantly, just like when you sit on boards for companies. And so it's something I'm incredibly passionate about, is not just helping companies, but also helping students, especially those that are poor, smart, and hungry from very, very difficult backgrounds. I love that combination. And so being able to help people, touch them, improve their lives, and help them find their passion through business education online is something I'm truly passionate about.
So you're still a VC, though. You're not just talking about it. This is life for you. Live it. You invest in companies. Let's break down the VC process, because I think there's a lot of curtains around it, and people hear it and hear investing and hear funding, but I don't think they understand the complexities of it. The SEC that's involved, the regulations, it's a lot of work. You have accredited investors versus not accredited investors, and there's so many rules and stuff you have to understand. So let's break down, in terms of, let's say, understandable terms, what the VC process is and why somebody would go through a VC versus a bank or something like that.
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you. So you can either raise debt, meaning a bank loan, or equity, meaning sell part of your company to a venture capital firm or rich people. Early on, I always strongly suggest never use debt. And the reason is banks are very risk averse, to the extent that if you miss just one payment, they'll basically foreclose your company or call all the loans back immediately. It's a little bit different in venture capital, right? And by the way, before I go there, I strongly recommend, everybody listening to your podcast to, before they launch a company, register it as an LLC, that's limited liability corporation, because if you don't, and if you get sued, or if the bank tries to foreclose on your loan, they can take your house and your personal assets. So protect your family by registering an LLC. Now, in terms of venture capital, the criteria I look for when I invest in companies is as follows, and this strategy works really well. Number one, I always look at the management team first, and I'm a firm believer that ideas are commodities, but execution is not, right? So if I see somebody that's an entrepreneur presenting to me, and I see over 500 different business models every year and a half for years and years and years. If I see somebody that's incredibly passionate about the idea that they're pitching to me, then I think to myself, my goodness, this person is not doing it for the money. And that's a good thing. I never like investing in people that are just trying to do it to make money. I want to invest in people that want to change the world.
You said in your course, yeah. I remember it stuck with me. I actually think I tweeted it out. Invest in the jockey, not the horse.
Exactly. So management team comes first. And basically, when you present to potential investors, you have to show your passion, kind of like Gary Vee. I mean, he's incredible. Or Marc Benioff, the founder of Salesforce.com, or Richard Branson. And if you come across as incredibly passionate and believe that you're going to change the world with your business model, then the venture capitalists will believe you as well, and they'll love to invest in you. And so the best CEOs and founders on the planet are always the best salespeople. And so number one is management. That's what we look for. Number two, we look for a massive total addressable market, or TAM, TAM. And if the TAM isn't in the multi-billions of dollars, it's not worth investing in. And the reason is that most venture capital investments go to zero, but the ones that don't, those are ones that we want to do exceptionally well from a financial perspective as well, because I have a fiduciary duty to my investors, right? So never start a company that doesn't have a massive market opportunity. And so recently in my class, I had a partner. I teach at a bunch of business schools at night, MBA courses. I had a partner from Kleiner Perkins, which is the best venture capital firm ever. He came in and he presented. And I asked him, what do you look for? And he said, well, of course, we look at management team first. But when it comes to the size of the market, we don't really like to invest in companies or take them too seriously unless the total addressable market, or TAM, is greater than $20 billion. And he mentioned that because he wants the underlying company that he might invest in to get at least 5% market share, or $1 billion in revenue on an annual basis. Now, what's interesting about what I've talked about so far is I haven't even mentioned the business model yet. Okay. Third, what we look at is if we're not the first investors, we like to see credible other investors already backing the company before us, right? And so I say that because a lot of times when somebody pitches a business model to you or me or anyone, you always have to ask yourself this: why am I so lucky to be given this opportunity? You know, why me? Why are they pitching this idea to me? And you got to be a little bit skeptical too. And it sometimes even conclude that maybe I'm the last person they've talked to. And so every successful venture capital deal I've ever invested in have been ones where I've had to fight tooth and nail to invest in the entrepreneur or get access to invest, right? And then the last thing we look at is, of course, the business model, right? And I know it's bizarre, it comes last. And as you mentioned, the jockey's always more important than the horse. And when it comes to the business model, we want to, of course, analyze the competition, you know, look at the barriers to entry, look at how this business model is going to scale online, because I invest in tech companies. So that basically sums up how I approach investing in a company from a venture capital perspective.
I think that there's so many parallels with that to healthcare, to a lot of things. It's understanding the people in front of you and really, really having a drive for something in terms of as a founder of a company. And then as an investor, obviously, you have to understand what these people are capable of doing that are in front of you. And it's kind of like you said, a salesperson, but it's, you almost have to build an almost instantaneous trust and comfort with the person. And that's a relationship. Like, you have to build a relationship so quickly when you're pitching. Like, a year and a half ago, I pitched for Shark Tank to be on for a product I invented. And that was a great experience. Actually, at that point, we were a company for like 6 months. And we had a successful Kickstarter. We were like one of the first. I think we might have been the first product, healthcare related product, to be fully funded on Kickstarter. We raised like $40,000 in 30 days. And so then Shark Tank was coming around, and somebody was like, you know, just jokingly, you should audition. I was like, ah, no, no, not for us. But eventually I just sent in the application just for kicks and giggles, and they called and they're like, yeah, we'll put you, you know, come down, audition and see what happens. So we flew down to Orlando and we auditioned, and we had to create a 60-second pitch with 10 minutes of information. And it wasn't about the technicalities. It wasn't about the details of the product or even us as a company. It was about the story, the personality, and then what can this thing do for me? And it was a fun experience, first of all, to do it. But we truly believed in it. And we actually made it past like 100,000 people down to the second round, which is like 1,000 people. And we almost made it on the show, but we were just too new of a company. We barely had a sales track at that point, but we were able to suck them into our story, and they could see the future with that. I think it sounds like it's very similar in your world of investing.
Yeah, I agree. I've met a number of people that have gone on Shark Tank, and it's really interesting because we watch that show on TV, and my kids love it because they're basically watching what daddy does, right? So, but the process is different. Most people think when they go on that show, actually, you think that you just walk into the room and, you know, Mark Cuban and everybody critiques you and you're done within 10 minutes. But it's actually 1 to 2 hours of filming that they do. And then they cherry pick what elements to actually post on the show online, right? And a lot of times it's the most entertaining stuff as well. But I think that I share their passion for trying to invest in people that are great salespeople, people think that can, you know, kind of reinvent an industry or change the world. And one thing I want to quickly mention about Silicon Valley, where I work, and I love it here, is that most of the people that are successful here, this is not their first startup. You know, this is their second, their third, or fourth. And so failure is actually not a bad thing. It's kind of a badge of honor. You know, and I always tell people that to fail fast and just keep trying, because you only have to be right in business once, right? And so when you start a company, give it a good 2 years, okay? And if it doesn't work out, then there's no shame in shutting it down. And the way you'll know that you should shut it down is as follows. 2 years in, you ask yourself, okay, Chris, if I had known the issues I'm confronting now 2 years ago when I wanted to launch the company, would I still have launched it today? And if the answer is no, that's cool, man. Just, you know, shut it down and move on to the next one. Because the average age of somebody that starts a company in the United States is 53. It's astonishing. So
wow. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
That's incredible. So you've got so much time to be able to try again. And, you know, most of the people that I've invested in that are really, really successful that, you know, have multi-billion dollar companies now are the ones that failed earlier in life. Even Bill Gates failed. Most people don't realize that. He started a company before Microsoft, and it was a failure. And Richard Branson starts a bunch of companies that are failures as well, but he doesn't care. He keeps moving. You know, he launched a company called Virgin Cola years ago, and he even, his marketing campaign was awesome. He drove a tank literally into Times Square trying to take on Coke and Pepsi. it was awesome.
That sounds terrible. Yeah. That sounds terrible.
It was out there, yeah. But he, and of course, he failed with that venture, but he's been successful, you know, at Virgin Airlines and all these other great Virgin companies. But if you haven't failed, you haven't tried hard enough in business.
I think that's a trait of personality. I think entrepreneurs, and I feel like there's that term gets mixed up and abused a bit nowadays. I think everybody gets cut kind of muddled, like lifestyle business versus entrepreneur. They don't get, like, entrepreneur is a necessity. You have to do this, otherwise it'll eat away at you. And it's high growth, high scalability, nonstop. You have to just go 100 miles an hour or fail at 100 miles an hour. It's that middle ground. I think, and it gets mixed up with small business a bit, which there's nothing wrong with small business. There's nothing wrong with lifestyle business. They're kind of the backbone of America. But it's like this differentiation that I feel like doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And it's, you know, it's different here. Like I've met so many people that have failed. And I always ask myself, why are they trying again? Why are they trying again? It's because the ones that are resilient and bounce back and keep trying it and until they're successful are the ones that are incredibly successful out here. And it's interesting because the most successful companies here in the San Francisco Bay Area are part of what's called the PayPal Mafia. And I'll explain what that means. PayPal was obviously this great company that was founded by a guy named Peter Thiel, who was the first investor in Facebook. And his co-founder was actually Elon Musk, right? And what came out of—
Not a bad duo.
Oh, it's incredible. And before I tell you the companies that spun out of PayPal as part of the PayPal Mafia, let me just talk quickly about Elon Musk. So Elon Musk started his company and he merged it with PayPal. And then he was co-CEO with Peter Thiel. And then they fired him. He got fired, right? Elon Musk, most people don't realize that. He got fired from PayPal, the company he basically co-founded. And of course, he bounced back and did tremendously well with Tesla, et cetera, and other companies. But PayPal basically runs the valley here. And so the people that came out of PayPal, of course, include Elon Musk, who started Tesla and all these other great companies. Also, Reid Hoffman, who started LinkedIn, of course, sold it recently to Microsoft. and also the founders of YouTube and the founders of Yelp. And they all came out of this unbelievable company, PayPal. And I mentioned it because I just want to reinforce that all people care about in the Valley, most importantly, from a venture capital perspective, is investing in great entrepreneurs, right? It's never about the idea. It's about passion. You know, it's about you getting up in the morning and telling yourself, you know, I'm not passionate about what I'm doing working for someone else, and I'm going to start a company and change the world and believe that I can touch and improve the lifestyles of every person on the planet. And so, again, it's always about passion and management team first before the business model.
Therapy Insiders is sponsored by Ascend Event, which is the ultimate business summit for rehab professionals. Check out ascendevent.com to get your tickets. Now, I promised you a discount code for being an awesome Therapy Insiders listener, and you get just that. Head over to ascendevent.com and type in code Therapy Insiders to get $100 off each ticket. Pretty cool, right? So, what is Ascend Event? I'm sure you've been hearing us talk about it, and Dr. Ben Fung and I are presenting at this year's event talking about digital marketing and how important it is for businesses. So we're really, really excited about it. But it's not just for business owners. It's not just for CEOs. It's not just for COOs. If you are working in a business, you should know that business because it helps you understand how everything runs. It helps the team come together. But I also wanted to learn a little bit more about Ascend and some of the speakers and what was the genesis of it. So I grabbed Dr. Heidi Janenga, president and co-founder of WebPT, to give us a little breakdown on it. So Heidi, why start a business conference?
Thanks, Gene. We really felt like when you put and you're able to put the brightest minds in private practice PT and even OT for that matter together in one setting, truly incredible things can happen. So with Ascend, we wanted to create a very innovative environment that you have the opportunity when you attend to discuss the ever-evolving world of business and learn from those who have kind of been there and done that, been there in your shoes for that matter, and that will challenge you to kind of bring your private practice to that next level. And like you said, Ascend is all about business, but this is an educational event. We really feel like you're going to learn practical business tactics that you can definitely capitalize on in this changing landscape. And first and foremost, we understand that if you're going to go to a conference, you've got to have that ROI. And so we've got 9 CEUs that PTs and OTs can actually earn while they're at Ascend. We also have a lot of networking time during Ascend so that you can mingle with lots of different thought leaders and your colleagues to really try to gain as much as possible out of some of the strategies that you might be learning within the conference itself.
So what kind of topics should we expect to hear at the Ascend Business Summit?
Compliance changes, of course. We're going to really drive home some important information around outcomes. New PT and OT codes, the alternative payment system. We have a great presentation with, which should be somewhat controversial. We've got all the different players who have opposing sort of philosophies around the alternative payment models, which I think is going to be some fireworks on stage, which I'm really excited about. And then some of the payment reform and billing issues that we're all struggling with right now in private practice. So it's going to be an awesome event, and I hope to see all of you there.
Thanks, Heidi. I'm looking forward to that payment reform discussion since I'm moderating, so there should be plenty of fireworks. Again, please check out ascendevent.com. Type in Therapy Insiders for $100 off. Look forward to seeing you there. Let's do some networking. Now let's get back to Therapy Insiders with guest Chris Haroon.
Well, I think that's an incredible story. And Peter has an awesome book, Zero to One, that I usually recommend people read. I don't necessarily agree with everything in the book, but I love his mindset on competition in that book. I don't know if you read it, Chris, or not, but in the book, he talks about that competition, and he gives the story with PayPal. Like, they were competing, I think it was eBay or something like that, and they were just, it became, the competition became the focus versus focusing on your own business. And then they stepped back and said, it's better for us to merge and be together versus competing against each other. So it really fit into what I was thinking anyway, but he kind of explained it. Because some of his thoughts are out there, but that was such a great thought that in business, control what you can control, be an entrepreneur based on your passion versus the perception of what others are doing. And that will only propel you forward. And, he's probably not the most successful investor probably right now, if not ever, for no reason.
Mm-hmm. No, he's amazing. He's amazing. And you know, the name of his company, I've partnered with him a lot in previous investments. The name of his company is Founders Fund. And the reason it's called Founders Fund is he always invests in founders only. And I really believe that. I wrote an article in online publication called Venture Beat recently, which is basically predicated on the fact that if you invest in a company, especially in the tech sector, and the founder is left, you're probably not going to make money, right? It's all about the founder. It's all about the founder. And you know, it goes with publicly traded companies too. In technology, don't ever invest in a tech company where the founder is left. And the reason is that bureaucracy settles in, right? And I have a lot of friends that work for very large old school technology companies where the founder's left. And I ask them, why is it that your firm can't innovate anymore? Why is it that two girls or two guys in a garage destroy business models, right? It's like David and Goliath. Why does that happen all the time in technology? And the reason is that big companies where the founders left become bureaucratic. They become bureaucratic to the extent that all people are focused on that work there is climbing the corporate ladder. And if they step out of line to try to innovate or change the world, if they're not successful, they're done. And if they are successful, you know, they're not going to get compensated because it'll disrupt the entire compensation structure of the firm. And so whenever I sit on boards of tech companies or startups, whatever, I'm never worried about competition from large technology companies. I'm worried about competition from two guys or two girls in a garage. David always beats Goliath. Small groups of people change the world. And the last thing I'll say about that is you look at a great company like Amazon. And the reason Amazon is so successful is because the brilliant founder and CEO, Jeff Bezos, runs the company like a small business. And he does this because he never allows any meeting to take place at Amazon that requires more than two pizzas. That's the two pizza rule. And the reason is—
I have heard that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. He wants to keep it small because, again, small groups of people can change the world.
Very cool. Do you think, so we're going through kind of that startup phase, and do you feel like there's a geographical difference in mindset? So I'm in Maryland, and we've had a couple early meetings, and we've had intense interest in the company, causing breakneck stuff to move. Mm-hmm. But there's this, you know, we're picturing consumer platform. We want people to share experiences. We want people to get out there. We want technology to be leveraged, not be the focus. We want people to go. That's actually the tagline we're working on. It's an exclusive share here with you, Chris. It's go, share, right? So you go and you share these experiences in such an intimate way. But the East Coast, I feel like, is just so more old school, more enterprise, more get a contract, get a deal, land a deal, even if it's millions of dollars, versus West Coast, where you are in San Francisco, California. It's how can we change the world? How can we just bring this all-inclusive, open-minded process? Is it just me, or is that actually a reality?
Yeah, and I love the tagline, go share. It's awesome. It's simplistic. Less is always more. Fantastic. And I have a friend who's been very successful, a gazillion companies he started, like Sonos, et cetera. And before he launches any company, he flies up to Montreal and has dinner with his 90-year-old mother, who is not in the technology sector like he is. And if she doesn't understand it over dinner, he never pitches the business model. So simplicity works.
That's awesome.
Love your taglines. Awesome. So in terms of West Coast versus East Coast versus the rest of the world, it's a different mentality in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know, whereby everybody's accepted and here it's cool to fail and everybody's approachable, right? People want to help you, right? And one thing I want to stress is that it's not just people that grew up here. More importantly, it's people that grew up outside of this area, people that grew up on the East Coast or people that grew up overseas. In fact, 60% of all founders and successful engineers in the San Francisco Bay Area were born overseas. And one of the reasons that it works well here, and there's kind of this outlook here that I don't really subscribe to, but some people do, which is If you want to be an actor, move to Hollywood. So if you want to work in tech, move to the Bay Area, right? But what's happened here is it wasn't invented overnight. You know, the San Francisco Bay Area was a 50-year overnight success, so to speak. And the reason it's relevant here is because of the hippie movement and because Russia beat America to space. And I'll explain what that means. The culture is different here because of one seminal event that occurred in the late 1950s. Russia beat America to space with Sputnik, and America was brokenhearted. And so around the year 1960, the Kennedy administration, JFK, created NASA. And NASA's only goal was to beat Russia to the moon. And so they couldn't do it, though, because they needed the proper technology to fit 100,000 little computer chips in the fuselage or top part of a rocket. And so the first notable venture capital deal was done here for that. A company called Fairchild Semiconductor was founded. And they did it. They fit a ton of little chips into the top of a rocket. And we beat Russia to space in the late 60s, which was great. However, as with all great tech companies, they sometimes get too big and too bureaucratic. And Fairchild employees left, and they call them Fairchildren. And Fairchildren companies included Intel, AMD, NVIDIA. So the chip industry was kind of born here. And then around that, the hardware industry, of course, with Hewlett-Packard. And then around the hardware industry was the software industry with Oracle, et cetera. And then around that, the internet sector, of course, with Facebook, LinkedIn, you know the rest of the names. And something else happened at the same time as all those companies were growing. It was the hippie movement in the late 60s. You know, a lot of students at Berkeley, for example, they only knew one thing in their life, which was war, unfortunately. You know, their grandfather might have passed away in World War I, their father in World War II, and you know, their brothers or whatever it is in the Vietnam War. And so they rebelled, and riots started here in the Bay Area. And the riots spread from Berkeley all the way down an hour south to Stanford University. And in the late 1960s, 400 students took over Stanford, right? And they took over because Stanford was doing a lot of highly classified government military weapons research. And then Stanford administration said, we're sorry, no more research on bad stuff that kills people, but let's just share ideas. And so this open source, beautiful sharing culture environment was developed. And so, you know, it's like a very fertile technology crescent version of the Tigris and Euphrates here, right? And so people want to share. And, you know, Sandhill was born. And Sandhill is kind of like Wall Street is for investment banking in New York. Sandhill is out here, and it's a road for venture capitalists, right? And it was born right beside Stanford. And so all these great ideas get funded out of people that want to take on risks and think they can literally change the world, right? So a couple of people can change the world. Big companies usually can't.
That's an awesome story. I love that. And that was in your course as well on Udemy. And I watched that and the PayPal one, and it's just stories just like that, I think, suck people in. It's just, we love stories. The human nature, psychology, communication is built around stories. And I think that's, like you said, with pitching, with sharing and education, if you can bring people into a story while making it relevant to them, there's nothing more powerful than that. And I think that's why I like your course so much, is because it's not dry. You're able to make it relevant and interesting. And I think that's unique, and that's a skill in itself. So I'd love to finish out by asking you more very, I think, question that doesn't get asked often that I'm sure most people are going to be thinking as they're listening to all this. Let's say I have an idea and I have a team. How do I reach out to a VC? What's that process like?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I'm a firm believer that relationships are more important than product knowledge. It's an old cliche. It's who you know, not what you know. And I'd love to just tell your viewers that if they get a chance to go to youtube.com and do a search on three words, Steve Jobs Ask, A-S-K, right? Steve Jobs Ask. And that video will literally change your life. And I mentioned that, and I'll tie this into your question, because Steve Jobs is only successful, and we only use Apple products because of one event, which was when he was a kid, he picked up the phone and he called Bill Hewlett, right, from Hewlett-Packard. And he asked for help, and Bill Hewlett helped him. And as a way to pay that debt of gratitude forward, Steve Jobs helped a number of people and mentored them. like Mark Benioff, who started Salesforce, which is the largest technology company here in San Francisco. And so it's kind of like that old prophetic saying, ask and you will receive. And so what you need to do is network like crazy using LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is the best social media platform ever. And it's basically a monopoly. And that's why Microsoft bought it.
For like $20 billion, so basically, right? Like $26 billion or something?
Yeah. And I think they got a bargain too. I think it's an amazing company. And so what you do is this. You can get a meeting with literally anybody. Go to LinkedIn.com. Sign up for it. It's like $30 a month. It's very well worth it. Do an advanced search in LinkedIn and find people that have something in common with you. You know, if they went to, for example, Colorado State, type that in. And find people that went to Colorado State that live close to where you live or in a different zip code that you're going to visit. And send them a very simple message. And the message should be exactly like this. Subject line is hi. Do it within LinkedIn only. Send in mails. I-N-M-A-I-L. In mail. Don't ever send emails because everybody does it. Send in mails. So in the in mail through LinkedIn, subject line is hi. Contents of the message are this, for example. John, hope all is well. I also went to Colorado State University. I'm actually going to be in the San Francisco Bay Area in the next few weeks. Please let me know if you have time for a coffee. Thanks a lot, Chris. Okay, so what I did there was I kept it short because less is more and nobody reads long articles or long emails anymore, long in-mails. I kept it short. I basically found something we had in common, which was Colorado State in this hypothetical example. I used the words please and thank you. And I said, do you want to meet? I never said, why do you want to meet? Okay. And you don't do this. Don't say why you want to meet. And the reason is that if you say why you want to meet, like you're looking for a job or looking to raise money or help with a business model, a lot of times they won't even answer you, not because they don't want to help you, but because they can't help you. Maybe they're not hiring or they don't have capital to give to you, that sort of thing. But rest assured that people want to help you. All you have to do is ask. And my success rate in getting meetings with people I've never met before is 95% over LinkedIn. And I don't say that to impress you. Rather, I say it to impress upon you the fact that all you have to do is ask. Keep it short, you know, just like the script I mentioned, and you'll get meetings. You'll get there, right? But you have to ask. And most people don't ask. And that's why a lot of people aren't as successful or as successful as they should be in life. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, I really want to empower people and help them out. And that's the reason I made this online MBA course. And so if you go to udemy.com, that's udemy.com, and search for my last name, that's H-A-R-O-U-N, and this is Nancy, and find the course called An Entire MBA One Course, and I want you to enter in this code so you can get it for just $20. That's half price. The code is Up Your Business. That's all one word, all uppercase, Up Your Business. And I want to sincerely thank you for your time.
Likewise, Chris. It was an awesome conversation. I know everyone's going to enjoy it, that there's so much information in that. I have a feeling people are going to ask you to come back and delve into some more stuff. But it's so true. It's all about relationships. It's about building connections and avoiding kind of paralysis by analysis. You know, that little tip that you gave on LinkedIn, it's huge because so many people create these scenarios of why not to do something instead of just sending a 3-sentence in-mail or email or message or tweet or something. Like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They'll either say no or they won't respond. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The ROI is huge. Okay. But thank you, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah.
We're going to put all your stuff on the updocmedia.com podcast page for this episode. And if listeners want to get a hold of you, want to ask you more questions or delve into anything else, obviously check out Chris's course with the special code that he gave you for $20 off. Thank you for that, by the way. Where else can they find you?
Yeah. So on Amazon, I've written a number of books, and I met Tony Robbins about 6 or 7 months ago, and he's amazing. I mean, he's the real deal. And what he did was he read 800 self-help books, right, and put it together in an awesome course. And he really inspired me to write my own book, which I wrote and I put on Amazon. It's called 101 Crucial Lessons They Don't Teach You in Business School. And, you know, I'm humbled to say that Forbes profiled it as one of 6 books that all entrepreneurs need to read right now. And actually, Peter Thiel's book was one of those six books as well. And I wrote the book because I've met with Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, all these smarter people than me. And every time I've met with them, and my dad taught me to do this, every time I meet with somebody that's more successful than me, and there's basically that's almost everybody out there, I always ask them for one piece of advice. And I put it together in this book, 101 Crucial Lessons They Don't Teach in Business School. So again, that's on Amazon. I wrote it from my heart. I really believe in the principles of seeking mentorship from others and just asking for help, because if you ask for help, you will always get help, or you often will get help. And same thing goes for a business. You want to close a sale? You got to ask. If you want to get a raise or a promotion in life, you'll never get it unless you ask. So ask and you shall receive. So anyway, that topics like that are included in that book of mine on Amazon.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll put that in the product pages and podcast page as well, so people can grab a hold of it.
Thank you.
Awesome, Chris. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time.